Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Be'o Daf Lamed Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the top of Daf Lamed Vov. We notice at the very beginning of the Daf a marking, an inverted house marking. This, you can see, is also noted as number 2, indicating that we've already started our discussion at the end of our previous shiur. And at that point, we had noted that we will be seeing a series of questions that have in common the issue of torach beperos, as we called it, troubling yourself for the purpose of saving, salvaging fruits from whatever. The triangle, these house markings appear in different directions. So when you see this inverted house, that means your starting point has to do with what we know about Hilchos Shabbos. The other direction, the house marking point facing up, indicates as our starting point what we know about Hilchos Yom Tov. And the object of the Gemara is to ask, that which we say by one topic, does it apply to the other topic, or is there a distinction to be made? Of course, if that sounds a bit abstract, have no fear. This will become clear as we go through the actual examples. So if you are a first-time listener, hopefully it will become clear as we go on. If you remember our previous year, so we're simply continuing with that theme. Let us point out in our previous shiur a citation of a Tanaic source, a Mishnah in Maseches Shabbos was mentioned, and it had to do with moving boxes or barrels of straw in order to make room for people to occupy that area. The Mishnah in Shabbos mentions the movement of 4 or 5 boxes of straw or grain for the purpose of making room for people, for guests, or for creating room for learning Torah, which the term there was Bittul Beis HaMedrash. Now, regarding that source, we have a continuation of that source cited on the top, again dealing with Shabbos, and it says, and we now turn to the Gemara text, Hosam Tanan, there in Maseches Shabbos, Hosam is there in Shabbos Tanan, we have a Tanaic source, a Mishnah that says, Avol Loi Es HaOitzar, the Omar Shmuel, my Avol Loi Es HaOitzar, what does that expression mean? And we explain, Avol Lo Yigmor Es HaOitzar Kuloi, namely, that even though there is a halachic permission to move boxes of straw out in order to make room, don't move the last box out if you're dealing with a storage area. Namely, even if in that storage area there were only 4 or 5 boxes, and we know from the beginning of the source, and it's that which we saw on the previous omid of our Gemara, that 4 or 5 boxes is the number that you are allowed to move. Now, that's true if the area has more than 4 or 5 boxes, so you're allowed to move up till that number. What happens if that is all that is left in the area? So, this is what the Gemara refers to. You don't move them out. You don't want to expose the floor entirely. Dilma osi lashvuya gumus, because you might come to, ashvuya means to smooth out holes in the floor. I mean, what we're trying to say is that by moving out the very last box, you're now revealing the entire floor, and you might notice a hole in the floor, and that will lead you to something that would be strictly forbidden on Shabbos, to engage in filling up holes. That comes under the Isser of Boneh, the Isser of construction. So we want to prevent that situation from coming up. So regarding Hilchus Shabbos, it has been taught that don't clear out the last box of a straw or grain storage area. Now, Hochomai, the double underline is the same marking that you see in each one of these questions where we want to ask, what about in the other topic? In this case, Hocha here means here in Yom Tov, what is the din going to be? Do we say the same thing? Now, as we've seen in the past, there are two sides of the analysis, and that's why they're marked Aleph in the next line, the squiggle line, O Dilma Beis. So, Hosam, who b'Shabbos, is it that we say that there, regarding Shabbos, to also that it's forbidden to clear out the storage area mishum dechomir, because Shabbos is a day of greater stringency than Yom Tov. Avol Yom Tov dekiel shapir domi, on a scale of severity, Shabbos rates higher than Yom Tov. Yom Tov dekiel kiel, like the law, the word kula is a more or the word kal means light. It's lighter. It's less severe in the scale of severity than Shabbos. Shapir domi means it would be okay to clear out the last box. Oy dilma, or maybe Hosam Diika Bitul Beis Hamedrash Amris Lo. There, with regard to Shabbos, where there is a consideration of Bitul Beis Hamedrash, and still, even though there is a consideration of people not having room to sit and hear, listen to the Torah discussion, and yet we say, don't clear it out. We say, no. Hacha, in the Yom Tov issue, Deleko Bitul Beis HaMedrash, where the question is not one of people not having room to learn, Lo Kol Shekein, then all the more so it will be forbidden. Because here in our Yom Tov discussion, the question is simply, let's say, moving them to protect the contents of these boxes, which is a momon issue. It's less significant than the issue of not having room to study Torah. So that if in a situation where you have a strong motivation to move the boxes out, and yet we say no, here regarding the issue of Yom Tov, where it's an issue of the question here in our Yom Tov discussion is saving the fruit, saving the boxes, or saving the contents from ruination, certainly we won't allow you to move them all out. So the question is raised. We don't have an answer to that. We continue with a new question. V'hacha tnan, here in Yom Tov, meaning in our Mishnah, we have the Mishnah that said, Mashilin peres derech haruba b'Yom Tov, that you are allowed to lower the fruits that are being endangered by the upcoming rainfall, the impending rainfall. So we say you're allowed to push the fruits down through a skylight, from off the roof down through the skylight on Yom Tov. V'yomer Rav Nachman, lo shonu ela ba'oisoy hagag. And Rav Nachman says that this applies only to pushing the fruits down through the skylight on that very roof that the fruits are located. Avo migag legag loy. But to pass the fruits over from one roof to the next roof, even though they're at the same level, the same height level, that we will not allow. V'tanyo nami hochi, and a brisa says like that, ein metaltalin migag legag, afilu kishigagoisein shovin. One is not allowed to move the fruits from one roof to the next to protect them from the rain, even when the roofs are shoven, are at the same height level. Hosam Mai, what is the din regarding there in Shabbos? Hocha hu the Osir Mishum Yom Tov Dekiel. The Osir the Zuzebe. Here we're not allowing, because we're dealing with Yom Tov, which is less important than Shabbos. And because of its lesser importance level, it's people can come to treat it offhandedly. So we impose restrictions to compensate for the kal aspect of Yom Tov. Avol Shabbos de Chamira, but Shabbos, which is a more significant, more has greater seriousness or severity associated with it. So Velo Osi Lizulzule Ba, by our allowing you to do something like this, that won't lead to people disparaging Shabbos, Shapir Domi. So it would be okay to push the fruits from one roof to another. Oy Dilma, or possibly the reasoning is in the opposite direction. Ma ho chadiko hefsid peros amris lo. Mind you, here in Yom Tov, where the consideration is to protect the fruits from ruination, and we still tell you not to do it. Hasam, there, in the case of Shabbos, where it was an issue of simply making room for guests, the leka hefsid peros, there the issue wasn't one of loss of fruit. Lo kol shekein, certainly we will restrict it. Again, the question is asked, and we go on to a new question. Hocha Tanya. Here we have a teaching that says, regarding the fruits on Yom Tov that you want to protect from the rain, lo yishal shalem b'chevel b'chaloinois v'lo yoridom derech sulamois. One is not allowed to lower the fruits through a window. In other words, you might have a situation where you have the fruits are on the rooftop, and there isn't a skylight on the roof that you simply push them down through the skylight, but you have to raise the fruits up from the roof level and then push them out through a window that's located higher than the roof level, the floor of the roof itself. So that you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to lower the fruits by rope down through a chalon. A chalon is the window, and as we said, because of the tircha, the trouble, the exertion that you would have to invest in raising the fruits up through the window. And velo yoridom derech sulamos, and likewise not to carry the fruits down. Sulamos are ladders or staircases. The only heter that we give you in our Mishnah is lowering them down through the skylight, which is just a function of pushing them laterally till the skylight, and they drop down into the enclosed structure. But any more tircha we don't allow. So that's as far as Yom Tov is concerned, and what we've learned so far in terms of protecting the fruits from the rain. Hosam Mai, there in Shabbos, regarding the source that we saw about clearing out four or five boxes on Shabbos, what is the din regarding moving them down through a window? Hacha Yom Tov Huda Osir, here on Yom Tov we forbid it. Deleka Bittul Beis HaMedrash, where we don't have a Bittul Beis HaMedrash consideration. Avol Shabbos, but the case featured in Shabbos, the Ika Bittul Beis HaMedrash Shapir Domi. There is that consideration of them not having room to sit and study Torah otherwise. So we might then, yes, allow clearing out the place through lowering the fruits down through, with ropes, down through windows. Oy Dilma, Hocha Diko Hefsid Peros Amrislo, or maybe in the opposite direction. Here on Yom Tov, where there's a consideration of loss, and yet we say no. Hosam, there in Shabbos, Deleka, where the issue is not Deleka Hefsid Peros, the question there isn't one of suffering a loss, lo kol shekein, then certainly we will not allow. Teku, so this remains unresolved. So once again, taking the information that we have in one topic and then analyzing how it would apply to the other topic, we see that it's not necessarily something that we can transfer one to the other. We continue with a quote from the Mishnah. We have a Mishnah describing fruits that are currently being threatened by ruination through an impending rainfall. So the Mishnah says that you can cover the peros with kalim to keep them from the effects of of a drip. Rashi says delef on that. Rashi on the Mishnah says gishamim hanotvim min agag, to protect fruits that are going to suffer from rain dripping off the roof. The Gemara. Umechasenes haperos. Actually, before we continue with the Gemara itself, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading that's helpful to see ahead of time. The issue will be Tiltul Kli, the movement of a vessel. And when we speak about a vessel, it can refer also to a large piece of cloth. B'shvil Davar She'eno Nital. Can I move an item for the benefit of something else that I'm not allowed to move? Lefi Ula Mutter. According to Ula, you're allowed. Even though the item that we're trying to cover or save or preserve is something you can't move, I'm allowed to move something else for its benefit. Lefi Reb Yitzchok Oser. And the other opinion that we'll see in the Gemara is that of Reb Yitzchok. He says, no, you're not allowed. You're not allowed to move something for the benefit of an item that you're not allowed to move. So we'll be exposed to a machlokes amoroyim, and then in the continuation of the Gemara, if you want to scan ahead, you can see we have triangle markings. The triangles appear in two different directions. And on the under the Mivneh heading that we have, on the side of the Gemara, we see a triangle with the point facing upwards. That represents Letoivas Reb Yitzchok. Sources will be quoted for the benefit of Reb Yitzchok and will, in effect, be then questions on Ula. And the inverted triangles that appear later, those are sources that will serve to support Ula's position and will represent questions on Reb Yitzchok. We continue. Omar Ula, Vafilu Aviro de Livni. One is allowed to cover even bricks that are set up for building purposes. And now these bricks are mukta. They have no Shabbos use, no Yom Tov use. They're set aside for building purposes. But the drip can ruin these bricks. So Ula says you're allowed to cover them also. Reb Yitzchok Omar Peros Horu'uyin. Reb Yitzchok says only Peros. They are allowed to be covered because they're fit. You can benefit from them right now on Yom Tov. Not the bricks. The also Reb Yitzchok L'tamei, and Reb Yitzchok in ruling thusly is consistent with what he has said elsewhere in Maseches Shabbos. De Omar Reb Yitzchok, Ein Kli Nital Elo L'Dover HaNital B'Shabbos. Reb Yitzchok's position is that vessels cannot be moved for the benefit of other items unless those other items are also something you're allowed to move on Shabbos. Tanan Mechasen Es HaPeros B'Kelim. This is what we saw in our Mishnah. Peros in, Avira de Livni lo. The source can be read with this inference. The Mishnah says Peros can be covered, but bricks cannot be covered. Bricks meaning bricks that are set up for construction purposes. And that would be unlike Ula. Be a question on Ula. Answer, Hu hadin dafilu Avira de Livni. Hu hadin means likewise. Just like you said by the fruits they can be covered, so too the Avira de Livni. The ID Ditona Resha Mashilin Paris, but since the beginning of the Mishnah spoke about lowering fruits down through a skylight, there you're moving the fruits themselves. Under such circumstances, everyone agrees that only fruits and not bricks. Therefore, for the sake of balance, Tona Seifonami Mechasin Esaberos, the Seifa, the continuation of the Mishnah, used the same example that the Resha, that the earlier part had used, namely fruits. But in the Seifa, we don't learn it with this inference approach. So as we say, the Seifa is lav dafka. You cover fruits, but you could also cover avira de livni as well, the bricks set up for construction. Tanan, we have another Tanaic source. V'chein kade yayin v'chein kade shemun. This we saw in our Mishnah, that you're allowed to cover pitchers of wine and of oil. Those are items that are mutter. Well, that's a source that would lead us to think unlike Ula. Because Ula wanted to allow covering even things that are not mutter. The Gemara responds, Hocha b'mai askinon b'tivla. The kade yayin and kade shemen are in fact similar to the bricks. They're tevel. They're untithed. So you're not. It's not wine and oil that you are allowed to use, similar to the bricks that you're not allowed to use. And yet the Mishnah gives license to covering them. Hachi nami mistabra. And in fact, it's also likely that the kadim of oil and of wine are tevel. They're usser. If you were to think that this example of the Mishnah, of our Mishnah, is referring to allowed wine and oil, the Reisha already gave us an example of something that's allowed. So at this point, the answer we gave on behalf of Ula would sound like a good answer, that the Kadeh Yayin and Kadeh Shemen are actually forbidden. The Gemara rejects this proof. Kadeh Yayin v'Kadeh Shemen it's derichalei. In fact, these are mutter pitchers of wine and oil that you're covering. And you'll ask, what do I need that example for? We already had an example of fruits that were mutter. I need this example. One might have thought that only in the case of fruits did we allow their being covered, because the rain would affect them and create a practical total loss. But here with these kade yayin v'shemen, the rain would not create a big loss. It's called a hefsid mu'at, a minor loss. So maybe for a minor loss, they weren't concerned and wouldn't allow me to cover them. Komash malon, that even for a minor loss, you're allowed to cover them with the kalim that were mentioned. Tanan, noisnim, and of course you notice that the triangle just flipped over, so we're going to see a source that will initially seem to support Ula. Noisen kli tachas hadelef b'shabbos. One is allowed to place a vessel, say a pail, under a drip on Shabbos. Now, let us assume right now that the drip is a drip of water, dirty water, something that has no real benefit for you, and yet you're allowed to move the pail for it to catch the drip. So this would be an example of moving an item for something that is not fit. And that would be unlike Reb Yitzchak, who was restrictive. So Reb Yitzchak will answer, Bedelef Haroi, the drip here is clear water, fit, something that is fit to serve your animals. Ta Shma, Porson Machzelos Agabi Levenim B'Shabbos. Here we have a source that says you can spread out a mat on top of bricks on Shabbos. Well, bricks are something that are not allowed to be used as we would think initially, and yet you're allowed to cover them with a mat. So you're moving the mat for the benefit of something that you're not allowed to move. A question on Reb Yitzchak. No, the Isur Mibinyana, these are leftover bricks. They're from a building site. You don't need these for building anymore. And the bricks themselves are the Chozi Lemizga Alaya. They're fit to be used as a chair, to lemizga, to recline upon them. You can sit on them. So the bricks are something fit, so therefore you're allowed to move the mat for their benefit. That, of course, is an answer on behalf of Reb Yitzchak. Toshma, porson machzeles al gabi avonim b'shabbos. You're allowed to spread out a mat over stones on Shabbos. Well, stones don't have any Shabbos use, and yet you're allowed to move the machzeles, the mat, for their benefit. The Gemara responds that in fact the stones here do have Shabbos benefit. Bavonim mekurzolos. These are mekurzolos. They're different pshatim in what that means. Rashi uses a French word. We'll say these are either smooth stones or they're shaped stones. Dechazion lebeisakis, and they're fit for hygienic purposes after one relieves himself. Today we have paper that comes in rolls, and soft paper that comes in rolls for that purpose. In the Gemara, the time of the Gemara, they used to use stones that were properly, that had a specific shape to them, and were smooth and wouldn't cause any bodily damage while you're using them for these hygienic purposes. So they are fit, they have Shabbos use, and therefore Reb Yitzchak acknowledges you'll be allowed to cover them with the machzelis if you need to. Ta shma, porson machzeles al gabi kaveris devorim b'shabbos. You're allowed to cover a beehive on Shabbos. Kaveris devorim, a kaveris is a unit in which bees produce their honey. So one's allowed to cover the kaveris dvorim on Shabbos, protection from the sun, protection from the rain, provided you don't have trapping intentions. It's also to catch wild creatures, even insects, so you should not have intention for trapping them, and if that be the case, so you're allowed to cover the kaveris dvorim. Now, a kaveris dvorim doesn't have any Shabbos use, and yet you are moving the machzelis, the mat, for the benefit of this item. That's a problem for Rabbi Yitzchak. The Gemara responds, Hosam nami di'iko dvash. The unit, the kaveris, happens to have honey in it. And as a result of that, it's something that is allowed to be moved on Shabbos. Omale Rav Ukfa Mimeshan l'Rav Ashi. Ha tenach, this explanation of covering the kaveris dvorim because of the honey is true b'moisa hamadikot vash. That is a good explanation during the summer season when, in fact, there is honey. The bees have seasons in which they produce honey, in which they don't produce honey. So in the summer season, honey is present. Therefore, this source can be explained as we just did to defend Rab Yitzchak. But what about in the winter time, winter season? There's no honey there, and yet the source is allowing its being covered. So the Gemara answers, and this is answer number one, loy nitzrucha, this heter of covering it with the machzel, lo oison shtei chalos. This is a reference to two honey loaves. Now, honey was produced by the bees in chalos. Chalos is a term that most of us might be familiar with it in terms of bread, but it's a reference to a certain shape of honey. Honey that the bees produced was very thick, and it appeared as two loaves. Now, we have here a bracketed section. It's a long bracketed section, and on the side we have a note. You can see where the star appears, where we write, Hasbisograim, within the brackets, Hagemora Menaseh, and where we'll attempt, Litkoif es Hachuvashel Shnei Chalos, we'll attempt to challenge this answer, Avol Hu Nishar Ad Shemagim L'Rav Ashi B'Omid Beis, but this answer sticks. It remains till we get till Rav Ashi. You notice on the third line from the top of Omid Beis, Rav Ashi is marked as a number two. So what we'll do right now is we're going to skip to read Rav Ashi before, so we get don't lose track of what we're involved with right now. We are dealing with the question of covering a beehive on Shabbos with a mat, and this source should not be a problem for Rabbi Yitzchak. So in the meantime, we said we're covering it for the sake of the honey that's in the beehive, and the honey is something that's mutter on Shabbos, so there's no problem with moving the mat for the benefit of the honey. Let's skip now again, third line from the top of Omid Beis, Rav Ashi Omar. Rav Ashi says that the initial question isn't a question to begin with. The initial question, right before the number one on the lower part of Lamed Vav Omid Aleph, we dashed underline, B'moyis Hakshom Emaikom Em. What are you going to say when you give the honey answer? What are you going to say about the rainy season when there is no honey? So Rav Ashi says, the source doesn't talk about rainy season to begin with. Namely, in fact, during the rainy season, you wouldn't be allowed to cover it because of Rabbi Yitzchak's din. There is no honey in the rainy season. Rav Ashi Omar, Mi Kotoni B'Yamois HaChamo V'Yamois HaKshamo, does the source refer to Yamois, the days of heat, which is the summer, and the days of the rain, which is the winter? It doesn't say that. The source, if you read the source carefully, the source that we're referring to, of course, is the source that's quoted on Omid Aleph, where the last inverted triangle appeared. It says there, "B'chamo mipnei acham u'shamim ekshamim." The covering of the kaveris devorim is to protect from sun, protect from rain, and b'yoyim nisa b'yomi tishrei. This is talking specifically about the season of Nisan and the season of Tishrei, which is Nisan is a reference to the spring, Tishrei is a reference to the autumn. In those seasons, in the Yom Nisan and Yom Tishrei, there is sun, there is a possibility of rain, and there is the presence of honey. So there is honey, therefore I'm allowed to cover the Kaveres Dvorim. So that with Rav Ashi's approach, we see a rather simple response to benefit Reb Yitzchok. The covering of the Kaveres Dvorim was for the benefit of the honey which was there, and the honey is something that's mutter on Shabbos, and hence the movement of the Machzels was for something that's mutter. But otherwise, it wouldn't be allowed, as Reb Yitzchok would teach. Now, we did have a long bracketed section. We turn back to that. And in the brackets, because of the nature of the give and take of the discussion, one can easily lose track. We're using an additional marking, a volcano shape, which under our Mivneh heading indicates this is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give and take. So the narrow part facing upwards represents kushios or questions, and the inverted trapezoid referenced tshuvos, responses. The Gemara asks, Oison shtei chalos muktzos hein. The two chalos that we are protecting during the winter season, those are muktze. Now, we didn't explain before why those two loaves were there to begin with, but Rashi explains that bees need a source of sustenance throughout the winter when the that is their sole source of food supply. So since he's a bee, a honey producer, he wants his bees to have something to live on. So he, the owner, isn't going to be taking the chalos, the shtei chalos, for himself. So they are muktze, they are set aside, they're not available for your Shabbos use. And therefore, if you're going to be covering them, you're actually covering something that cannot be used. It's not available for your use on Shabbos. The Gemara responds, Hocha b'mayaskinon. Here, in this source, we are talking about Shechoshav Aleihem. He did think about using them for himself, not for the bees. So it's not muktze. Now, a technical question. Avolo Choshav Aleihem, my? Let's say he didn't have this special intent to use it. What are you going to say then? Usher. So you'd say that the Shtei Chalos are usher. If that be the case, so in the source, when the source wants to teach me prohibition, it teaches me Isser, but that's in terms of the Isser of Tzedah, of entrapment. Why leave the topic of the honey and talk about entrapment when you could have taught a distinction, heter versus iser, within the realm of the shtei chalos themselves? Therefore, Adetoni, instead of teaching Ubavachili Skave Lotzud, instead of the source, when it wants to teach me prohibition, it says, you can cover provided you don't have intention for trapping. Liflog v'lisne b'didah. Why not make a distinction in it, within the topic of the shtei chalos? Bameh dvar ma'murim. When is it that, and this would be the way to the source should have read, when is it that you're allowed to spread the mat? Bameh v'm shechoshav aleihem, where you intended for their use. Avolo choshav aleihem osir. But if you didn't intend for the use of those shtei chalos, it would be forbidden. Now, since the source didn't teach that, apparently the only isser is when it comes to the entrapment. And otherwise, as far as the shtei chalos are concerned, they would be allowed under all circumstances to cover them. The Gemara says, no, hachi ko'omar. The way to understand the source is as follows. Afal pi shechoshav aleihem, even if you did have intention for using the shtei chalos for your own purposes, making them non-mukze, ubilvad shelo yiskavin lotzud. Provided, you're allowed to cover them, provided that you don't have intention for their being trapped. B'mai u'kimta. Another question. So how have we set up that source regarding the kaveris dvorim? K'Rebbe Yehuda, we have apparently set it up in the spirit or in, along the lines of the Tana Rebbe Yehuda, the Islay Muktzah, that holds from the concept of Muktzah. And according to our explanation, we said that the Shtei Chalos, unless you have intention to use them, you would not be allowed to cover them, because they are Muktzah. So that is the principle that Rebbe Yehuda accepts. Amos Seifa. Well, we continue reading the source, and it said in that source that we saw before, you can cover the kaveris dvorim, provided you don't have intention for trapping. Ason Rebbe Yishimon. This part of the same source goes like Rebbe Shimon. He is one who argues with Rebbe Yehuda on the issue of muktzah, and here, with regard to intent, you're allowed to cover the kaveris dvorim, provided you don't have intention for trapping. And that is in line with Rebbe Shimon's approach to halacha di omar, who says, dovor she'ein miskavei mutter. Actions, even if the result is would be a violation of Shabbos, as long as you don't have intention for that result, it's okay. So what are we saying here? We're saying in this source, we're beginning with the source being authored by Rebbe Yehuda, because we're acknowledging Muktzah, and then the same source flips over to Rebbe Shimon's approach to halacha with regard to Dover Shein Miskavein. The Gemara responds, this isn't a problem of being a source like Rebbe Shimon, like Rebbe Shimon meaning to the exclusion of Rebbe Yehuda. V'ho abaye v'rovo. The Tisbro, the Gemara says, de Rebbe Shimon, are you sure that this source is in accordance with Rebbe Shimon? V'ho abaye v'rovo, the Amri Travayu, both Abaye and Rova agree. They both say, Travayu is the two of them, Abaye and Rova both agree, Moide Rebbe Shimon, the Psik Reshe v'lo Yomus. Rebbe Shimon concedes that there is a prohibition when the result is inevitable. And in this case, we're talking about entrapment. And by throwing a mat over a beehive, you're going to be trapping them. So it would be usur. And that's not something that's specific to Rebbe Shimon. So why are you trying to say that this source, that the end of the source that says Ubuvachel is Kavi Lotsud, is a reflection of Rebbe Shimon? Meaning Rebbe Shimon to the exclusion of Rebbe Yehuda. The Oilam, the Gemara answers, Kula Rebbe Yehuda hi. The whole source is really in accordance with Rebbe Yehuda. The Hocha b'maya askinan, and here, with regard to the mat that you're throwing over the beehive, is the is be kavi. It has kavi or windows. It has openings in it. And by throwing the mat over the beehive, I'm not going to be, in effect, trapping them. Before we go on, we didn't explain the term psik reshe v'lo yomus sufficiently, so let's just go over the last question again, or the response, we should say, in what we thought was a source that would be Rebbe Shimon. We responded, it's not a source that's specific to Rebbe Shimon, who is lenient with regard to Dover Sheinu Miskavein, because Dover Sheinu Miskavein is a reference to things that the result is not inevitable. But in the case here, where you're throwing a mat over a beehive, the thinking is that the entrapment is an inevitability. And hence, that idea of something inevitable is explained or reflected by the term psik reshe v'lo yomus. Literally, that has to do with someone that's interested in cutting off the head of a chicken and expecting it not to die. That's an impossibility. So therefore, in cases where the result is inevitable, even if my intention is for something that's allowed, I simply want to get a chicken head for my child to play with. But since the resultant death is inevitable, the fact that my intention might be for something else, that doesn't justify the action. So the source that spoke about throwing the mat over the beehive cannot be described as a source that reflects only Rabbi Shimon to the exclusion of Rabbi Yehuda. Even Rabbi Shimon will agree that you're not allowed to throw the mat over the beehive in such a way that you're going to trap the bees. The Gemara then responded. We started reading this before. The Gemara says that Li'olam Kula Rabbi Yehuda He. The source is in effect really in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda. The reference to the windows that we just mentioned was to get around the problem of the psik reshe aspect of entrapment. Now, as far as how then do we explain the expression ubelvad shelo yiskaven lotzud, the Gemara answers velo tamo the Rabbi Yehuda, and don't say ubelvad shelo yiskaven lotzud elo emo ubelvad shelo yaseno mitsuda. Notice we continued at the top of Omid Beis, where the refined reading of the source should be that when you are using a mat to cover the beehive, make sure that you don't make it as a trap. The Gemara asks, Pshita. Rashi at the bottom of Omen Aleph says, Kevon de Isle de Rabbi Yehuda, Dover Shein Meskaven Osir. Since we know that Rabbi Yehuda's approach to Halacha is that if the result is going to be forbidden, even if you don't have intention for it, the action is forbidden, Loma Lei Lemisni, why does the source have to spell out Ubilvad Shelo Yase Mitsuda, provided that you don't make it as a trap? Say that entrapment is a primary violation of Shabbos. It's one of the 39 chief forbidden activities. So you're telling us something that is very obvious. We don't need Tanaic sources to reveal that which is obvious. Hence the Gemara's question here is Pshita. So the Gemara answers, Mahu detemo. I might have thought to say, Bemino nitzod osir. When we speak about Dover Shein Miskaven as being osir, that applies only to items or creatures that ordinarily one traps. Animals that one traps for food purposes or for other specific purposes, might be for furs. Shelo Bemino nitzod muter. But creatures like bees, one doesn't trap bees. And trap bees don't serve any purposes. So I might have thought that throwing a mat over the beehive, when you don't have any entrapment intentions, it would be okay because it's shelo bemino nitzo. Komash malon, therefore the source has to tell me that you cannot throw a mat over a beehive that will cause entrapment. You have to put it up in such a way that it will not entrap the bees, even though the bee is ein bemino nitzo. So we finished here the bracketed section, and as you can see, if we go back just to review a little bit, the number one that we had at the on Omid Aleph, that was there to show answer number one to the question of Yemoisa of Bikshamim is a reference to, in fact, the winter season when you have the two chalos that do remain through the winter season. And we asked, is it still not a problem for Yitzhak because you're covering it even though they are muksa? So we answered, the owner had intention; it was choshev aleihem. Rav Ashi, as we saw before, Rav Ashi says there's no question in the first place because We're not talking about a beehive during the winter season when, in fact, there's no honey. But we're talking about the beehive during those times of year that there is honey, and you're covering it for the benefit of the honey. And as a result, we will have defended Rabbi Yitzchok's din up till this point in the Gemara. V'noisten kli tachas hadelef b'shabbos. The Mishnah taught that you can place a vessel, a pail, under a drip on Shabbos. Tana, and we have a Tanaic source that says, im nismale hakli, if the pail, the vessel, gets filled, shofech, you can spill out the accumulated water, v'shoine, put the pail back a second time, v'eino nimnan, and you don't have to resist that or withdraw from it. In other words, you can keep repeating this activity. Bei rechaya de abaye dolof. A bei rechaya has to do with a grindstone. And the grindstone was made of clay. And the grindstone, being made of clay, will get ruined in water. So we have here a case of a grindstone belonging to Abaye that was in a place that water was dripping on it. Also, lekame de Rabbah. Abaye came to Rabbah, what am I to do? It's Shabbos, and I don't have enough pails to put under the drip in order to protect the grindstone. Omar le, so Rabbah says, zil, I le lepurech lehasam. Bring your bed over there where the grindstone is located. De leheve kegeref shel re'i. The grindstone then getting wet, soggy with the rain will be disgusting. Rashi says, Zil aile lepurech lahasam lebayis shehu sham, into the room in which the grindstone is located. De lehave kegerav shel re'i shehu meusim horechayim lechalios lifnei mitascha. It will be it will become disgusting for your bed to be in front of this grinder that's getting wet. The ato mutur letaltelon lehotzion lechutz kida omar lekamon de gerav shiri mutur lehotzio leashpa. And being now that you have a situation of something disgusting, you'll be allowed to carry the grindstone, the grinder, out of there. Based on the heter known as Geref Shelri'i. We'll see more about that later, but it has to do with something that is disgusting. You're allowed to remove it. So we continue in the Gemara. Yosef Abaye v'kokashile. Abaye, upon hearing this, we'll play say this advice, he though raised a question. V'chi oisen geref shel re'i l'chadchila? Is one allowed to cause a situation to become disgusting in the first place? In other words, what your recommendation is to, in a proactive fashion, create a situation of that which is disgusting. Right now, my bed isn't there. I'm not experiencing disgust. And you're telling me to put my bed there in order to create disgust, which would then be grounds for me to move the rechayim away from there. Is that allowed? Adahachi, in the meantime, nofal bei rechaya dabaye. Grinder fell apart. The room in which it fell, it collapsed and it was destroyed. Omar, Abaye reacting, noticing this hashgacha, this divine intervention, so to speak, says, "Tasingly, I had it coming to me, the Avri Adamar, that I violated that which Rabbah had taught." Now, one still might ask a question here, but is it not so that Ein Oisin Gerav Shari Lechatchila? So the Tosfos across from here asks this question. He points this out, that even though that is in fact the halacha, that you're not allowed to create a situation of that which is disgusting at the outset, Yet Abaye was acknowledging that Rava was correct. So the Tosfos explains here it would have been mutter because of the additional element of loss. Tosfos gives another approach as well, but he is sensitive, of course, to the question, and he does provide an answer. We continue. Omar Shmuel, Geref Shori'i, Va'ovid Shomeme Raglayim. A Geref Shori and an Ovid, Rashi points out that Geref and Ovid are really one and the same. They are their vessels. It is a vessel that holds waste. We can imagine a child's potty made of clay. So it's Geref Shori is the solid waste, and Meimei Raglayim is when it is holding urine. So Shmuel says these situations of a Gerav Shari and an Ovid Shalmeimei Raglayim Mutter Lohotzion La'ashpa. You're allowed to take them out to the garbage. Take them out of where you are sitting and they disgust you. Carry them out to the garbage. Shu Machziroi, and when he brings it back, Noisein Boy Mayim Umachziro. He should add water. Put water in there and bring it back. Now the empty Geref Shori'i, Rashi explains, is the Muktzin Machmas Mius Hain. The Ilav Agav Mayo Lo Motzili Tutulinu. And if not for the water that you add, you wouldn't be allowed to move these vessels, the Ovid or the Geref, which are otherwise disgusting. Now, you were initially allowed to move them out of there because of human dignity considerations. But to bring them back to where you are, there you need an additional heter, and that's the water. Now, the Gemara continues. Savur mino, the initial thinking was based on what Shmuel teaches, Geref shelri'i, agav mona in bifnei atzmo lo. The Shmuel teaching was a geref, shomer is like, we'll say, a potty holding waste in it. That only under those circumstances can you carry it out, but to let us say, pardon us for the vivid description here, but to pick up the re'i itself by hand and carry it out, maybe slip on a plastic glove or something, but carrying the item itself out, that would not be allowed. That's the initial thinking. Toshma, so the Gemara comes to say that is not true. That when you have something that's disgusting and bothering you, and it's in your presence, you can remove the item itself, even if it's not contained in a vessel. Dahu achbarto, there was a dead mouse. Dishtakach beasparmaki derav Ashi, that was found in the spice storage area of belonging to Rav Ashi. Amalu Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi said to whomever he was speaking to, Nakta b'tzutzitza v'afkua, take it by its tail and throw it out. So you see that the source of disgust itself can be removed, even without it being contained in a vessel. But just to repeat what we mentioned before, that as far as bringing the vessel back, in the instance that the item of disgust was in a vessel, and you want to bring the vessel back, and the vessel itself happens to be disgusting, then you'll have to add water to the vessel. The vessel will now be holding water, and you're bringing it back in that fashion. But otherwise, to bring something itself that is disgusting back to where you are, that would not be allowed. We continue now with a new Mishnah, and in this Mishnah you'll notice the use of a double underline. And what we see in this Mishnah are in effect three categories of, let's say, three examples of actions, three categories that we are told that one is not allowed to do them on Shabbos, and likewise, one is not allowed to do them on Yom Tov. So we have several categories, and you will notice that they are called Shavus, Rishus, and Mitzvah. That which is classified as Shavus is an action, an activity, that is Oser Midrabanan, in fact, all of these examples, the three examples we're about to learn about, are rabbinic in nature. But in the realm of Shavuos, the example of Shavuos is something that is purely elective. There's no mitzvah element to it. The realm of Rishus that this Mishnah will mention is a realm in which we prohibit you from doing something, even though the action has some mitzvah aspect to it. Nevertheless, because of a fear of coming to violate Shabbos or Yom Tov, we restrict those examples, those actions. And then there are actions, there are things, examples of things that are actual mitzvahs. Not that they're related to mitzvahs, but they're actual mitzvahs, and still we do not allow them. Because you can come to a more serious Shabbos violation, hence we restrict you in these. Now as we turn to the Mishnah, things will become much clearer. Kol shechayoven olav. Now if we skip the brackets a moment, keeps the reading smoother. We call shechayoven olav b'shabbos, chayoven olav b'yom tov. Anything that's forbidden on Shabbos is forbidden as well on Yom Tov. Now, what are we referring to specifically? So that we read the Mishnah again. Kol shechayoven olav mishum shivus, mishum rishus, mishum mitzvah. B'Shabbos, chayoven olav b'Yom Tov. One cannot do those things on Yom Tov. If he does, he is said to be violating our rules. V'elu hein mishum shivus. The following actions are called shavus, and as we said before, they are simple actions that have no, they're not related to mitzvahs. It's purely elective. Lo oilin be'ilon, one's not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos, nor Yom Tov. Velo roshven al gabi behemo, velo shoten, not to ride an animal. Velo shoten al pnei hamayim, nor one is to swim in the water. Velo metapchin, velo mesapkin, velo meraktin. Metapchin is clapping hands. Misapkin is hitting oneself on his thigh, and meraktin is not to dance. Now we speak about clapping and this and thigh clapping. This has to do with trying to keep a beat in musical terms. These are dancing is what it is. Dancing. These are activities that are not allowed. They're not allowed on Shabbos nor on Yom Tov. The following are classified by the term rishus. To translate it won't really provide us with any greater understanding than just using the word rishus. It's a category, and this includes lo donin. There is no judgment. One cannot sit, a court can't sit in judgment on Shabbos nor Yom Tov. Velo mikachim, one is not allowed to marry a woman on Shabbos nor Yom Tov. Velo cholzin, velo miyabin. Cholzin is the shoe removal ceremony, which frees a yavama to marry anyone else she likes. She's not bound to the surviving brother-in-law of her husband's brother, the husband who died, leaving her with no children. So in order for her to continue, she either marries a surviving brother, and if not, chalitza is done. But that shoe removal ceremony is not to be done on Shabbos nor Yom Tov, velo miyabnin. Likewise, the marriage to the surviving brother is not allowed either. V'elu hein mishum mitzvah. The following are actual mitzvos, they're actual precepts or commandments that one is not allowed to do on Shabbos. Lo makdishin. Makdishin has to do with sanctifying items to the Beis HaMikdash. That's not allowed to be done on Shabbos. Velo ma'arichin, velo machrimin. Ma'arichin and machrimin, different types of temple dedications. Velo magbian truma meiser. One is not allowed to tithe the truma tithe nor the Meisr tithe on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Kol elu b'Yom Tov amru, kal v'chomer b'Shabbos. All of these have been said as being restricted with regard to Yom Tov, and if that be the case, all the more so with regard to Shabbos. Ein bein Yom Tov l'Shabbos el oichel nefesh b'vad. There's no difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos in terms of what's allowed and what's not allowed, with the exception of the realm of food preparation, where we say on Yom Tov, food preparation is allowed, baking and cooking, for example, and on Shabbos, that is not allowed. The Gemara goes through all of the examples that we saw in the Mishnah and brings out why they are forbidden. Lo'ilin be'ilon, one is not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Gzeira shema yitlosh. The fear is that when he's climbing the tree, he might rip off a branch from the tree. And ripping off a branch from a tree is an isur d'oraisa. That's a Torah level prohibition. And that falls under the heading of kotzer, harvesting. And so in order to keep a person away from that more severe violation, we say, don't even climb the tree. V'loirechen al gabi behema, why not? So there are two stages in coming to an explanation. We start, gzeiro shema yetze chutz l'tchum. The initial explanation, which will be changed, is the fear that if we allow you to ride an animal on Shabbos, you might go beyond the allowed boundary, which is 2,000 amos, or let's say approximately a kilometer beyond the city limits. So don't ride an animal because you might come to violate tchum. The Gemara asks, Shema Mino, should we conclude tchumin de oraisa? If we're imposing a rabbinic prohibition in anticipation of something else, it means that something else must be a Torah level prohibition. Because if that something else were only rabbinic itself, so we don't make rules or restrictions to protect against something else that itself is only rabbinic. We call that Ein Oisin Gzera or Ein Goizrim Gzera L'Gzera. So if you're telling me that riding the animal is prohibited because otherwise you'll come to violate tchum, that would indicate that the tchum halacha, the halacha stating that you cannot go beyond city limits by more than a kilometer, is a Torah level prohibition. Now, we don't know that to be such. And for our discussion, even though the Gemara in Sota has more to say about this, for our purposes right now, tchum is known as a rabbinic level prohibition. So why then can I not ride an animal? Elo gzeiro shema yachtoich zmoira. We are afraid that if we allow you to ride an animal and you'll need a whip and you don't have a whip and you can make a whip by simply ripping off a branch. And now that ripping off of the branch that will serve as your makeshift whip, that is an isur d'oraisa. So we tell you, don't even start riding the animal in the first place on Shabbos or Yom Tov, so as not to be tempted into ripping off a branch. V'lo shotin al pnei hamayim. We don't allow for swimming on water on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Gzeira shemo yase chovis shel shaitin. You might come to make a floating device. Chovis shel shaitin. Rashi explains in greater detail what it is. It seems to be a reed arrangement. It could be something like a makeshift raft where you take reeds that are interwoven or woven together. And Rashi says it's used for as a training device for swimming. So we're afraid that if we allow you to start to swim, even though you might know how to swim fine, but you might be tempted into making this called floating device on Shabbos. Other than that, would be strictly forbidden. V'lo mitapchin, v'lo misapkin, v'lo meraktin. One is not allowed to do these different types of clapping actions, nor dancing. Gzeiro shem yitakin klei shir. Because these are, as we said before, they're used to keep a beat or dancing, which speaks in and of itself, are done often in the context of music which is produced by musical instruments. So if one were to use a musical instrument, there is the fear that it might break and you'll come to repair it. It's very common that people who play guitar, they need to, their guitar string snaps, or there might even be a shaila concerning, an issue concerning adjusting, tuning the guitar. That might also come under this consideration of shemi takin klei shir. And shemi takin klei shir, you might come to repair an instrument. Repairing an instrument on Shabbos is an isur d'oraisa. So we tell you, don't even start clapping and all, which which starts getting you involved with the use of musical instruments, which could lead to yitaken klei shir. V'elu hein mishum rishus lo donin. The Gemara asks, "V'ha mitzvah kavod?" Why do you call it rishus? Rishus is a term that means something that is optional. You can do it. You can choose not to do it. It's something optional, which sounds like it's not mitzvah related. Mitzvah literally means a commandment. But now judging is a mitzvah. V'ha mitzvah kavod? So why do you call it only Rishus when the mission itself provides for a category known as mitzvah? So why is judgment under the heading known as Rishus? The Gemara answers, Lo Tzricha, the Mishnah is speaking about a case, De Ika, De Odif Mine. We're telling you not to judge under circumstances when you're in a place where there's a more proficient, more expert individual in that locale. So under circumstances where there's a more expert individual in that locale, so your, let's say, obligation to judge is not the primary, you're not the primary choice, so you're not called a mitzvah. Your judgment would be classified then as rishus. And we're saying don't judge on Shabbos, even when there is someone more expert around. V'lo mekachin, one is not allowed to marry on Shabbos. V'ha mitzvah kavod, but is that not a mitzvah? Rashi says at the bottom, V'lo mekachin ha mitzvah kavod shenoisi isha lifros v'lirbois. Marrying a woman is the means to procreation. V'maiko kori le'rishus. Why then is mekachin an isha, marrying a woman, called rishus, when in fact it's would seem to be more appropriate to classify it as mitzvah? Loi tzricha. No, the case is necessary. It is necessary to speak about mekachim in the context of rishus. We continue at the top of Daf Lamed Zayin to islay isha ubonim. We're talking about a person who has already fulfilled his basic mitzvah of procreation. Therefore, this additional marriage isn't classified as mitzvah's pure commandment because he's fulfilled his commandment. This is a man that has a wife. We're talking about marrying a second woman, a second wife, and he has children already. So that further marriage, further child births is not classified as mitzvah per se, therefore it's called rishus. But Rashi points out there is still an element of mitzvah, but it's not the primary level of urgency, as opposed to one who hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah puravu. The mitzvah puravu, of course, what one has to have is machlokes beisham beis hillel. Beishamai says two males, and beis hillel says a male and female. But as we said before, our mission is talking about someone that already has children. Lo chosin v'lo miyabmin. Our Mishnah mentioned that you're not allowed to do chalitza nor yibum, and it called it rishus. The Gemara asks, v'ha mitzvah kavod? The same question as we've been asking all along the way. But is this not a mitzvah? The chalitza, freeing the woman to marry whomever she wants, and miyabim is her marrying her brother-in-law, that's a very big mitzvah. So why is that called only rishus? Lo Sricha, the Mishnah is talking about a case de ika godoil umitzvah begodol liyabim. The rule of yibum is that when a woman's husband dies and they left no, and he had the husband produced no children with her, so the eldest of the surviving brothers is the one that's expected to do the mitzvah of yibum and chalitza. And the Mishnah is talking about a brother who's not the Godol. He's not the eldest of the surviving brothers. So for him, it's not the primary mitzvah, the primary way of fulfilling a mitzvah, and hence it's called Rishus. Now, all of these things we mentioned so far, not to dan, not to judge, not to marry a woman, not to do chalitz or yibum, why not? What's the problem? v'kulu taimomai, and all of these, why not do it? Gezeira shema yichtav. We're afraid that you might record in writing what was done. You'll record the judgment, you'll record the marriage or the Yibum Chalitza. These are events that one writes. There's a recording of them. And writing on Shabbos and Yom Tov is strictly forbidden. So we don't want you to do those types of actions that could lead you to to actual writing. The Eluhein Mishum Mitzvah. Lo Magdishin, Velo Marichin, Velo Machrimin. We had in the Mishnah a series of examples of things that are pure mitzvah, and yet you're not allowed to do them on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So why can you not dedicate things to the Beis HaMikdash, sanctify things to the Beis HaMikdash? Answer, Gzeira Mishum Mekach Umemkar. It looks like a commercial activity. And Rashi points out, Mishum Mekach Umemkar, De Lemekach Umemkar Domu, it looks like a transaction. Shemotzi Meshus L'Shus Hektish, you're in effect transferring something from your possession, from your domain, to the possession of the Beis HaMikdash. And Mekach Umemkar, all activities that appear as commercial transactions are forbidden, because you might come to record, to write a shtar, write a document that records these events. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.